You're listening to Robert Wright's Non-Zero Podcast.
Hello, Paul Bloom of the Small Potatoes Newsletter Empire. This is Robert Wright from the Non-Zero Newsletter Podcast Empire. How are you doing up in the 51st state?
I have been better. How are you doing, Bob?
I'm doing okay. Why have you been better, Paul? What's gone on?
I'm glad you asked. I have a variety of complaints, which maybe we could just focus on more in the paid section of our conversation.
No. I think our entire audience deserves to hear about your suffering. What's up?
I cracked a tooth a few days ago.
So in
an hour, I'm off to get a tooth extraction.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm living off various pain pills. I'm alternating between Tylenol and ibuprofen, as one does.
Mm-hmm.
My Uber account 2 days ago was hacked and I got my money. So I woke up to an email saying that I hope I enjoyed my $306 ride in Australia. I did not. I got my money back, but I can't get back onto my account.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was downstairs getting myself a cup of coffee in preparation for our conversation in this Airbnb I'm staying at, there was a distinct smell of gas from the stove. And when you go on, so my wife and I were talking, we both smelled it. And when you go online, they say, leave the house immediately, you're going to die.
You didn't die.
I have to talk to you. So I'm going to take my chances.
So there's a chance that you'll just like your screen will go blank. We'll know what happened.
Burst into flame, and this would go viral for you. It'd be best thing that ever happened to you. Actually, this would be like a New York Times front page. You know, just like explode on screen, or I think more likely it'll just cause increasing intellectual deficits. So I'm just going to be gibbering and drooling by the end of this. Anyway, how are you?
Well, Paul, listen, it's not in my nature to engage in like duels for sympathy or anything. But if we could just start with the dental thing.
Yeah.
Paul, tell me, what does this look like to you? Take a look at that. What does that look like to you, buddy?
Is it dental related? Is it a tooth?
It's a whole fucking fake tooth that fell out of my mouth. Okay. And while you were at the dentist this afternoon getting surgery, I'm going to be presenting this to my dentist. And he's going to be explaining how much suffering that's going to involve at my end, okay?
I'm sorry.
So just lighten up on the self-pity, could you?
Yeah.
Little?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, I think we're going to turn to the question of Canada and whether it should become the 51st state.
Isn't it remarkable, by the way, that people pay to listen to us do this?
Well,
then when we're talking, I realize there's people walking around with headphones, they're in the gym, they're driving, just listening to us bitch about our lives and our dental problems.
Well, look, there's a good transition here because I am against the 51st state thing. And one reason is the whole little wallowing in self-pity thing you did up front. You know, the Canadian people are a weak people, Paul. They're weak, self-pitying people, and I do not want them as part of our empire, okay?
It's so much like an American to mistake kindness and politeness and civility for weakness.
No, I'm not mistaking that. I'm mistaking that series of little whiny complaints. Oh, I'm dying of, like, gas in my house. It happens. People die, Paul.
Oh, my false tooth fell out.
My tooth split. I had to take a pain reliever. Oh, that's really tough. So, wait, are you on a pain reliever right now?
I'm on Tylenol ibuprofen, so I'm not on the good stuff.
Oh my God! And
as the evening proceeds, I'm on a pain reliever called whiskey, which the Airbnb people have conveniently left us. So
you should ask for Tylenol with codeine at a minimum.
Yeah. Well, you're not talking tonight after my extraction. I'm not going to be in a fine mood. But yeah, so Canada. So put aside the question of whether it's actually going to happen. Would it be a good thing for it to happen?
Well, you know, what's funny is that you drew to my attention a column written by my friend Ross Douthat that actually seemed to be serious about it. I mean, he was arguing that Canada should, given enough time, maybe realize that, it makes sense for it to join the United States. He was serious. At first, I thought it was going to be like a parody column, like.
Yeah.
You know, what's the famous one about eating babies? A Modest Proposal.
Jonathan Swift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think he's kind of serious.
I don't know. He acknowledges that, again, according to a poll, he mentions only 10% of Canadians want to move to the States. So much of our identity is that we're not American, as he points out. And
yeah.
So I can't, there's no enthusiasm here for such a move. And I'll also tell you that my my surgery today.
Oh, are we getting back to that now, Paul? Another reminder of why I don't want you to be part of our great union.
We're going to be constantly shifting back to this, but I'm paying like $50 out of pocket. So, our healthcare, and I
you're getting the opposite of sympathy from me now.
Yeah, our healthcare has its weaknesses. I think the best thing in the world is to be an affluent American of good health insurance, but on average, our healthcare in Canada, something to be proud of.
Yeah, I mean, I have, look, again, dueling pity is not my style, but I have zero dental insurance, zero, zilch. And that has led me to take a conservative approach to oral intervention.
Okay. You're going to have like a whole wooden head.
And that's another great segue, because if you don't join the nation peacefully, I think Trump, actually, no, he has not embraced military intervention yet.
He actually, and it's only like for Trump, you'd say this is good, but he actually said he does not planning to invade us.
There are no imminent plans for a worthwhile Canadian invasion.
I mean, Trump can more seriously, Trump could impose tariffs, and we are a small country in population, though big in spirit. He could impose tariffs that would be quite damaging to the Canadian economy.
They'll also be
damaging to the American economy, but, you know, you guys are 8 times the size or something. So it's going to hurt us more than it's going to hurt you.
As they say, this hurts me a lot more than it hurts you.
Yeah. You know, for a Republican to argue about incorporating Canada is in some way, as Doubt says, a bit... suicidal for the party, not suicidal.
I like Doubt It, by the way. I like that pronunciation. Let me just say Doubt It. You can do a lot of work with that, but...
Is it do that? Doubt It?
It's Doubt It, but I like Doubt It. Are you right, Ross? I doubt it. You can just, like, say that.
Yeah. Well, with your last name, these things come to mind.
Look, he says... he's kind of serious when he says, and I quote, "The problem is that it's hard to see how Canada can successfully renationalize." Now, the backdrop for that is him explaining how during the Trudeau era, Trudeau kind of tried to define Canada, as Ross might put it, as a country without a national identity. I mean, apparently Trudeau actually did say, quote, "There is no core identity, no mainstream in Canada." Ross quotes that. He doesn't go on to quote the rest of what Trudeau says, which is, quote, "There are shared values, openness, respect, compassion, willingness to work hard, to be there for each other, to search for equality and justice. Those qualities are what make us the first post-national state." Ross does quote that phrase, post-national state. And that's the end of the Trudeau quote. And then, and by the way, I'm all for a post-national state. I'm going to start one myself.
Music to your ears.
I want to start one myself. We'll get to that later and explain how people can join. Maybe not on this episode of our podcast, but that's in the works. Then it's after that that Ross says, it's hard to see how Canada can successfully renationalize. He goes on to add that the Trudeau era helped provoke some of the Trumpist sentiment you see now in Canada. And the era featured very careful encouragement of immigration, so-called high-skill immigrants and so on. And then he says, it's hard to see how Canada can successfully renationalize, to which my reply is, Ross, it's hard to see how America can successfully renationalize. We have, in essence, we are in the process of breaking up. And what you should expect is more and more in the way of transnational tribalism that continues to divide both nations, I would say. You know, bonding of the Trumpists and so on. You know, Ross does write about, where is it that he writes that, and of course, permanently adjacent to America, whose global hegemony may be threatened, but whose influence over the English-speaking world is being magnified by our very online age. I would say, you know, maybe temporarily for like another month until the auto translate features are fully in place. But the more important effect of the information technology is to do what I said. It'll strengthen the transnational bonds of like subnational tribes. So you get these supranational tribes. Okay. This is the vision.
Yeah. A lot going on there. So for example,
I'll shut up.
No.
I just figured since you're on drugs, no, I should do the talking.
I got a nice buzz. It's a soothing voice, a lot of good ideas. So first thing, Trump's Trudeau's list of all these traits, not all the Canadians share them. A love of hard work, compassion for others. Some provinces got them more than others. You could talk about them. Doubt that. Is right that we are, I think in some way, Canada is what America is supposed to be, where each of our provinces is to a large extent a separate experiment. Certainly Quebec is different from every other province. And there's not much similar between Alberta and BC and PEI. They're very, very different in cultures and in political polarity and something like that. I'm not sure it's a bad thing. We're holding together. The other thing is, I listened to Pierre Poilievre, who's the head of the Conservative Party, and most likely the likely bet for the next Canadian Prime Minister, because Trudeau, by the way, has officially stepped down from his leadership, or he will, or he said he will.
He is going to. So
he'll be replaced by somebody else from the Liberal Party,
and there will be an election in what, the fall or something.
Yeah. And they're likely to lose to the Conservatives. Poilievre is reasonably popular. And I listened to Poilievre on Jordan Peterson, which was an experience. Jordan Peterson is particularly fawning when it comes to conservative Trumpian politician like Poilievre. And Poilievre has a lot of attractive features. But there's something he goes on and on about, which is, look how badly Canada's doing relative to the States. GDP, investments, income, house prices. And everything he said was true. But then I went on to Claude and I asked him to graph a lot of the data. Claude,
this would be the AI Claude.
The AI Claude asked him to graph. And it's exactly right. Poilievre is exactly on this. But then I said, graph America next to Canada, Germany, the UK, a bunch of other countries. It's not Canada that's the outlier. It's America that's the outlier. Since, 1990 or something, you probably know this better than I do, America's been going great guns.
Have we really?
Economically, virtually in a lot of these indicators, like GDP, like the ratio between how much money people make and how affordable houses are, it's been kicking Canada's ass. We were once at parity and have been kicking Canada's ass, but it's also been kicking Germany's ass and the UK and France. It's been doing well across Democratic and Republican administrations. US is doing something right.
But not so well on the income equality front or certainly the wealth equality front.
No. And not so well at things like life expectancy and infant mortality, mortality and stuff like that. But
you can't have everything.
Can't have everything. But you guys have higher incomes, and your house prices are cheaper, and your groceries are cheaper.
I'm feeling better already.
However, I'm happy living in Canada. Our streets are much safer. The healthcare is better. The people are nicer. Social services are better. We are hit with higher taxes, but we get something for those taxes.
Yeah, I think you got a great country. I do not want you to be part of my country because you are a weak and soft people. You never invade countries, for example. You sit there complaining about your dental surgery. It's like you think it's easy invading small countries when you know that regional chaos will ensue. Regional chaos is no picnic, Paul, but we are strong people.
We look at Greenland and it never occurs to us.
Right. Who knows what that will unleash? Do we sit around worrying about it? No. A man of action acts, Paul. He doesn't whine about dental surgery. You know, this guy, the conservative, Pierre, what, how do you pronounce his last name?
Polyev.
Likely Polyev. So the R-E are silent at the end, as I would know if I were more cultured and spoke.
I watched a YouTube video where he explained how to pronounce his name.
Okay.
This is the preparation I do to talk to you, Bob.
So he's a Francophile by, is he originally French?
No, he's not.
I mean, not French, but you know what I mean. I'm sorry.
Now you're asking questions I don't know. He's not Quebecois.
Okay.
But he has a French background. He's adopted. Talks about his life. It's an interesting life. He somewhat models himself after Trump, but the reality is he's actually, his policies are not particularly different from Trudeau's, except for things like house prices and taxes, important things like house prices, taxes, crypto, energy policy, but not over things like healthcare, gay marriage, trans issues, whatever.
Well, Trump, gay marriage isn't an issue with Trump. Some aspects of the trans issues are. I don't think he's going to try to dismantle gay marriage. It's stylistically that Polyev, if I've got that right, emulates Trump, I think.
Yeah.
Some of those things, you know, energy policy, crypto, those aren't nothing. So there are policy similarities, but I was reading about him, and he has painted his country, it says, I'm reading from the New York Times, as, quote, broken and ridden with, quote, crime and chaos. He has derided Prime Minister Trudeau as a, quote, wacko, and his ministers as, quote, crazy, quote, disastrous, quote, incompetent, and discredited. This is what Trump brought into our political discourse. You didn't used to call people wackos, although this will be a good segue to another thing we're going to talk about. Obama once did intimate that maybe Trump was a wacko in front of a bunch of other people, thus humiliating him. And you wrote a piece about power of humiliation, small potatoes, which we'll get to perhaps shortly. But
Trudeau, by the way, came off as Obama-lite, very Obama-esque in all sorts of ways. And Trudeau, to be fair, nobody likes him anymore. He's been in power for a long time. Canada's not done well during the time. But he's always been a man possessed of some charm, of genuinely sort of progressive sensibilities. He's probably the best looking of all major leaders. there's a series of pictures on Twitter, right? When he started like 8 years ago, Trudeau, 8 years ago, they're like identical.
Mm-hmm.
He apparently has not aged. Anyway.
Isn't Italy's prime minister kind of attractive?
Yes, I think is.
Is it Giorgia Meloni? I mean, let's settle this. I'm going to Google her. Look.
Let's rank people, the attractiveness
of all
the world
leaders. I don't want
to
hear like about, you know, sexism and stuff, just because when I talk about the attractiveness of political leaders, I focus on
we're talking
on
about attractiveness of male
women.
Leaders.
What?
We're talking about attractiveness of male political
You're
leaders.
You're talking about attractiveness. I'm going to be the one who's accused of something when I but first I have to look at a picture of her and confirm or deny. Definitely I would definitely rather go on a date with her than with Pierre Trudeau. I mean not Pierre Trudeau, whichever Trudeau, Justin.
Pierre Trudeau was himself a very attractive, vivacious man.
Oh yeah, and his wife, who also dated, shall we say, Mick Jagger, right? Didn't Maggie do the mystery dance, as they say in Canada, with Mick Jagger? She was never she wasn't married to Mick Jagger, right?
No, she was never married to Mick Jagger. There's a story I read a profile of Maggie Trudeau, which describes her at one point at a party, somewhat drunk, trying to open a champagne bottle with her teeth, and it gets wrestled away with her before she does that.
Would you drop this dental suffering thing, Paul? Please.
As I was saying this, I didn't notice.
We keep getting back to why I do not want Canada to join our great union. Mm.
Enough with this biting commentary.
It's definitely time for a segue. Is there anything else we want to say about Canada before we move on to humiliation?
We'll just keep on track on that.
Mm.
So I wrote this short Substack piece called The Humiliation Theory of American Politics.
Mm-hmm.
And after I laid out the theory, I mean, look, there's no simple explanations for why people do what they do. People do what they do for many reasons, blah, 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 blah. But I do recount a few stories like where being publicly humiliated seems to have goaded people on to do certain things. And the best example is the often reported story that Trump decided to run for president after Obama roasts him at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, I don't know, 10 years ago or 15 years ago. And I saw the roast. I was watching on TV, and it was very funny. Just really ripped into Trump. And Trump's sitting there, you know, he's sitting there.
I mean, remember, Trump had been questioning Obama's very legitimacy as president by suggesting that he hadn't been born in the United States, which would have made it illegal for him to be president.
That's right.
And not to mention, of course, arousing all of these, you know, tribalistic, xenophobic, you know, arousing the worst parts of human nature, which is Trump's specialty. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, and it was humiliating for Trump. And so he strikes back. Then I tell some other stories. I tell, you know, Obama himself says that after he lost, I forget what the race was, some sort of senatorial race, he goes to the DNC and is treated like a nobody. Can't get into parties, can't get into rooms, disrespected.
And he uses the word humiliation to describe the pain of losing his election. Yeah.
And then Elon Musk, our obsession, as we remember, used to be kind of a Democrat, roughly Democrat, critical of Trump. You know, middle of the road views. And I think there's all sorts of things that have transformed him. But one of the things I think that made a difference was when he wasn't invited to Biden's conference of the automakers who do electric cars. They invited everybody but Tesla, who was the biggest maker. And he said it's because of the unions. He didn't have the right union. But I think it was embarrassing to Musk. And then finally, the favorite story is one that sort of is a story that's going to happen in the future. Tucker Carlson strikes me as somebody of immense political potential within the MAGA movement. But he was once on a show, you will remember this, Crossfire. Where it was a liberal and a conservative. He played the conservative. They kind of rotated. Was your friend Michael Kinsley on the show at some point?
Mike was co-host for a while, yeah.
And
John I was once Stewart, invited on Crossfire by Mike.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't.
I said I didn't know enough about the subject. It was genes and human behavior.
Yeah.
Oh, but go ahead. Mike anyway. Said, "Look, if you're not going to seize this opportunity, like you're hopeless." And yeah, he was right. It was. Go ahead.
Look what happened. Yeah.
joke, buddy.
I don't know if I'm joking or not. But John Stewart comes on the show and rips into him, and I didn't actually think much of John Stewart's point or something. Weird about it. But anyway, it was he just tears into Tucker Carlson and then they shut down the show. And I read an article about saying it was an excuse, the show was not making money, they wanted to shut it down anyway, but they shut it down on him, and it was very humiliating. And then Tucker Carlson was recreated, gave up the bow tie, became and now he's going to be, you know, and now he is. And we were talking before at the Republican convention, you know, he is a fantastic speaker. Off the cuff, fast on his feet, extremely aggressive, very funny, really does the happy warrior stuff. Entirely unhinged, I think. There's this wonderful clip of him describing how in the evenings, at night, when he sleeps, he's attacked by demons who claw at his body.
Yeah.
And then he reveals
that he also sleeps with, like, large dogs. And it's like, Tucker? Do they have claws? Do they paws? You know, there's a theory I have. Because he talks about the scratches like on his arm that could have only come from a demon. Anyway.
Yeah, well, you gotta go for the simplest explanation. To me, it seemed demons. Mm-hmm. The dogs would have to go all the way around or whatever. Anyway, so I talk about this and I argue that, I say, look, I talk about humiliation. Humiliation is terrible. It is a form of social death. Where the people who you want their respect will laugh at you.
I've been there.
And then it's fucking terrible. And then I say two things. One thing is we should not do it. We should avoid doing it, even at clear targets like Trump. The consequences can be terrible. It leads people to kill themselves. It's just like often it's directed these, and it's, you know, the poor woman who did the breakdancing in Olympics. You know.
I miss that. You mentioned it in your piece, but I had not seen. I'm so out of it. I didn't.
You were.
I heard that breakdancing was part of the Olympics, and that was. I had seen it decried by some conservative, but.
So she does a breakdancing act, which, if you watch a video of it, is not particularly impressive.
Well, how did you get to the Olympics? I guess it's a sign that breakdancing has only been part of the Olympics for a short period of time.
So the argument is that her husband was involved in selection and there's some corruption. I think the evidence there is very weak. But anyway, so people would mock her. There's a lot of videos of people mocking her. In my neighborhood on Halloween, I saw two people dressed up as her.
Oh, and that's harsh. And I hope she didn't see them. She wasn't like with you.
No, she's too aggressive to be in peaceful Canada. But
peaceful, whiny Canada.
Peaceful, whiny Canada. You know, we don't have a reputation for being whiny. I don't know
where you do now, buddy. You do now.
So. And just stop it. It is in people get a kind of, I think, a really awful pleasure from this piling on, this exerting their power over other people. But I do end with something.
Are we talking now about piling on whiny Canada or just humiliation more broadly?
Humiliation. Okay. The humiliation of our country at your hands is a separate issue. But then I end by saying, look, I'm not actually saying humiliation is always practically a mistake. So if you click on the links, I say, you know, Trump delights in humiliating his enemies. You know, Chris Christie with, yeah, you know, jokes about his weight and everything.
It's little Marco, Ted, what was it? All the,
right.
Sleepy Ted, Jeb? Was it Sleepy Jeb?
Yeah.
No, anyway.
Ted Cruz.
I mean, that whole thing. I'm so embarrassed to be living in a country where that is something like the president does. I mean, how fucking pathetic is that?
You know, I'm not saying that Canada should annex the U.S., but you yourself, I think, could be quite the figure in Canada. A late stage transition,
you
become a major Canadian.
You think it's not
Canadian
too late to resurrect myself as Canadian Prime Minister?
I wasn't quite thinking of that. I mean, just a major
the
intellectual
next Jordan
figure.
Peterson? The next Jordan Peterson,
you could
perhaps?
Be the next Jordan Peterson. The thing is, just a little bit of aggression and intelligence and everything in Canada, just like, you know, wow.
Apparently, given Jordan's, not but, that I know him. I mean, Professor Peterson.
But anyway, so I'm not saying humiliation is essentially a bad strategy. It's worked very well for your new president, but I'm saying it's wrong and we shouldn't do it. So I'm chastising people.
Humiliation is wrong.
Don't
you know?
First
of all, let me say on the Musk thing, it's really true. I was in Austin and I was talking to someone who had known him pretty well. Her husband had actually worked very closely with him. They had known him for years, and then I think not so much. But it was like the first thing she brought up, and I mean, she was even kind of outraged still about Biden not inviting Obama to his big electric vehicle thing, which was probably in deference to American labor unions.
Yeah,
since
it was.
Tesla's. Yeah,
yeah.
Anyway, yeah. And what I would add is, remember, Musk was bullied as a child.
Yeah.
Although, I think maybe we can connect that Tesla issue to his decision to endorse Trump, maybe, although there were other factors pushing him there. If you ask me, had he not been bullied as a child, we might well never have heard of him, and he might well not be the fucking bully he is. I mean, that's the difference between Trump and Musk, I think. They're both bullies. They're both completely obnoxious and abhorrent, but I think Musk was bullied in his adolescence. Trump was a bully in his adolescence, and it just worked. So there are two paths to becoming a bully, I think. So you're saying humiliation is, you're saying it's morally bad. I mean, one thing I thought when I read your piece is, well, Paul's not a utilitarian. I kind of am.
You're thinking that humiliation could be sort of an instrumental goal, could make the world a better place.
Well, it can, but I'm not like an act-based utilitarian. I'm a rule-based one. So I wouldn't say you decide on a case-by-case basis. I'd say you have to come up with, like, principles. Like, if a person is a sufficiently horrible person, it's okay to try to humiliate them, I guess. I do think, as a rule, you're better off just not doing it because, you know, the pleasure is fleeting and the long-term consequences can be bad. That's probably a general rule.
That's a good way of putting it.
I do think the pleasure is deeply enough embedded, and the whole phenomenon of humiliation is, you know, the patterns surrounding it are sufficiently universal. You see it in all cultures that, you know, there's some part of human nature it's tapping into, right? It's like, I do, you know, it gets to the challenge evolutionary psychologists have in explaining laughter and humor. It seems to serve a lot of different purposes, you know, and that's certainly possible. A given adaptation can arise, adaptation in the biological sense of being, you know, something that was favored by natural selection. So, for example, like laughter, it can arise for one purpose, and then it can be seized on, well, by natural selection and for multiple purposes, and then also culturally for other purposes. But the whole ritual of laughing at people as they are humiliated, you know, suggests that maybe even that specific manifestation of it has a pretty direct root in an adaptation. But I don't know.
I think a lot of it, some of it may pose puzzles in the same way that laughter poses real puzzles. I think some of it's straightforward. We're very status oriented animals, so it's no mystery why us. You know, we experience gradual drops in status. I think of it as we age, we may sort of drop down in status, getting lower.
Speak
and lower.
For yourself, Paul.
But it's just gradual. But humiliation is a sudden drop in status at the hands of other people, and there's no mystery why it feels horrible. Why do we like doing it? I think there's different things. In some way, status is kind of a zero sum thing, you know. Mm-hmm. If I make this person fall, then relative to him, I go up.
Yeah, it is totally a zero-sum game.
And I think there's also something involving groupiness, which is, you know, it's fun online or in person to be with a bunch of other people, and you're all pulling somebody down. You're destroying that person's social status.
No, that's what I mean. It feels so deeply good that, you know, I do wonder that whether it has pretty direct roots in human nature. I mean, certainly the status seeking part of it does. There's good reason to believe that social status was correlated with reproductive success during evolution. And which helps explain why humiliation is such an energizing, can be such an energizing experience.
Yeah.
Because it's a major, I mean, if you're really humiliated, it's having a stat, you know, at least temporarily, status lowering effect. It is a threat to your social status. For people to make fun of you in a deep way, it's funny. There is this. There's a form of kidding, you know, that is part of bonding, right? It's like
as when you kid with me.
No, actually, I'm trying to humiliate you enduringly.
I treat it as an attempt to establish
exactly
a closer
right.
relationship.
That's exactly right. And this is a lot of cultural variation here because it was very much part of my, like, growing up that this is a way you express affection. Like, you know, it's a fine line. It is a fine line among, say, a group of, like, young males where... You know, it's funny. It can both be a way of expressing the fact that they're part of the team and expressing the fact that they're not the highest guy on the totem pole in the team, on the team.
Yeah.
So it does a lot of things, but God, is it fun.
Good.
So fun.
I mean, you're right. You need some sort of tolerance for that. And it's often a test. I mean, if you're in at least in a male group, so I wonder if you're in a male group and you burst into tears as somebody criticizes you, that's not good. You got to,
as a Canadian might do.
As even in Canada, we have some sort of issues, even in Canada. But you know, you talk about cognitive empathy. I'll appeal to you, but one of the biggest failures of cognitive empathy I've ever seen is people's inability to appreciate what it feels like to be in a situation. So however common cancellation is on the right or the left or whatever, I often see people, oh, so-and-so was canceled. Big fucking deal. They're going to be back making tons of money, whining about their problems and everything. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's any appreciation of what it feels like to be ganged up on. And it's one thing, say, if I'm ganged up on by a bunch of Trump supporters. That may be inconvenient in all sorts of ways, but I don't give a shit. Like, you know, it'll even enhance my status. But when my fellow academics and my fellow people on the left, if they were to gang up on me,
right,
and I'm person non grata and I'm insulted and I'm derided, that just, I don't care if I make $1 million at the end of it because I decide to go on free press or whatever. Like, that feels like shit.
Yeah, and being ganged up on by the other tribe can actually elevate your social status in your tribe. That is one of the problems with the current dynamic on social media, is that the more you provoke the other tribe, the more you're hated by them, the more you're loved by your own tribe. So it's positive reinforcement for deepening the tensions between the tribes. Like, this is a serious problem. It really is. I mean, in America, it is. Because, as I'm trying to explain to Ross Douthat, America itself is not exactly a picture of coherent national identity these days.
But you know who's going to fix that? Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh, man. Another amazing transition. You're so amazing.
I got him.
As long as we're doing this transition, is it close to time for us to do the transition to overtime?
It is. The Facebook stuff is like, should be, we can do Facebook
stuff.
We'll start
with it and then brutally bring down the paywall. And it's so fascinating, this discussion we're about to have. And I'm going to leave that part, you in charge of that part, like making it fascinating. But that people will say, where can I go subscribe? Where can I become a paid subscriber to either either the Small Potatoes newsletter or the Non-Zero newsletter?
Yeah, just click somewhere,
because that's the way
paid subscribers get all of this.
Yeah.
So did you watch the video where he presents his view for Facebook? And
I started to watch it. I mean, watching Zuckerberg on one of these things where he's, "Hi, everybody." I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can we start with that? Establish a baseline. Like, what is your take on Zuckerberg? Like, before he declared himself a warrior for free speech, which he now says he actually did 4 years ago. He just means it in a different way now. But what is your take on Zuckerberg?
I think the policies themselves are a mixed bag. I don't actually think they're an invitation to genocide or to end of the world. I think that there's trade-offs, as he says, between the policies like getting rid of fact checkers and doing content moderation. I think as he says, and I appreciate the honesty, it's going to increase the amount of false information and bad shit on a site. But at the same time, it will decrease the amount of people who have been banned for saying things they shouldn't have been banned for. So there's that sort of trade-off. What strikes me is that the extraordinary amount of ass kissing towards Donald Trump, which is, you know,
you mean in the video itself, which I have
in the video
seen
itself,
in
the policies and everything. It is this one of the many, besides giving the man $1 million for inauguration and coming to visit him personally. All of these changes in Facebook are prompted by the idea, are not all of them, are largely prompted by the desire to please Donald Trump. And you know, Zuckerberg talks about this isn't free speech is now, you know, on the ascendance because of the recent election of Donald Trump, which is the idea of Donald Trump as a free speech warrior. And I've heard smart people say this, like, oh, whatever you think of the man, at least he's favorite free speech and everything, is insane. He's the most censorious, easy to offend person imaginable. A list of all the times he threatened to imprison, sue, or otherwise punish people who say things he doesn't like would go on for 100 pages. More, he's the most anti-free speech political figure I have ever seen. So anyway, that's my
thought. This feeds so well into the series of brilliant points I'm going to make behind the paywall.
Drop the paywall right now. Behind the paywall.
I also want to talk a little about the impending arrival of season 2 of Severance.
Oh yeah, okay. Coming up tomorrow as we.
Yeah. And I watched Pantheon, this animated thing about kind of AI, which I'm willing to recommend. But
I'm going to give that a shot. You had mentioned that before.
But first, I got this like a grand unifying thing. You know, I'm going to connect my Zuckerberg rant to a rant about this controversy at the Washington Post over the cartoon that was canceled.
Yeah.
The cartoonist, Pulitzer Prize winning cartoonist,
yeah,
quit in protest. It's all going to come together. It's all going to come together. But
okay,
I'm afraid that's going to happen over time. So if you want to become a paid subscriber, Small Potatoes or Non-Zero, feel free. We thank you in any event, of course, cherish your support. So
it's distracted me from my dental problems.
Yeah. No, don't say that, because then they'll think they've already done enough. No, you should give us money. You haven't done enough. You haven't done enough. And also smash the fucking like button, would you? What are you waiting for?
Smash the fucking like button.
Yeah. Okay.
Before we step in, I just have to say how remarkable it is. Pay us money to hear us talk.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. That's a good way to put it. You should be a branding consultant. You should consult in like marketing and pay us money. How did it go? Pay us money to hear us
talk.
That's good.
If you don't pay us money, maybe we won't talk anymore.
The more you talk, the better. The more powerful a marketing message this is, Paul. Keep going.
That's it. That's my pitch. No, it's the Don Draper moment.
He's going to keep going behind the paywall, folks. You're not going to hear him keep going for free. Okay, so thank you.
Thank you.
We are heading into overtime.